All right, so last week we started Perek Dal. We just picked up in the middle of the story. We picked up the fourth chapter of Megillas Esther. We had learned word had been sent out, the letters had gone out about the impending destruction of the Jewish people, and Mordechai had found out, and he ripped his clothing. He had gone to the gate of the palace, but he could not go any further because he was in his sackcloth. And Esther is trying to figure out what's going on, because Esther is the only Jew left in the province who doesn't know what happened, because Esther is in the palace. She didn't get a letter from Ahasuerus, she didn't get a letter from Haman, she didn't know that her people were about to be destroyed, so she's trying to find out what's going on. She tries to send a change of clothing, and Mordechai refuses, and eventually she sends the messenger known as Hasoch. Hasoch was one of her chamberlains or servants that were with her in the palace, and he is going to be the delivery boy in between she and Mordechai as they converse about the story. And where we last left off last week was Mordechai requests of Esther that she needs to go in to see the king, and she responds and says, we left off verse 11, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Kol Avdei HaMelech VeAmedinos HaMelech Yodim, everybody knows that anyone who walks into the king's chamber and hasn't been called, they've got one thing waiting for them, and that is death. Correct, thank you. Except for the one person who the king will extend his scepter to, but other than that, everybody is death. And everybody knows that, and I haven't been called for 30 days. So we left off last week with a couple of questions on this. Why is she saying, questions we asked last week, why does she say everybody knows? Who cares that everybody knows? Let's say she was the only one who knew this. As long as it's a rule, that's the king's policy. Why is it relevant that Esther says to Mordechai, but everybody knows you can't go in? Who cares that everybody knows or doesn't know that? As long as she knows that there's a death penalty involved with her going in, so let her go in. Let her say, I can't go in. And then she says, and I haven't been called in 30 days. And let's say she had been called yesterday. Even if she'd been called yesterday, that doesn't give her permission to go in today. Her claim is, I haven't been called. I can't go. Why does she give this whole speech? And it almost seems like she's trying to get out of doing something. Like Mordechai is saying, the whole Jewish people, they rest on your shoulders. Esther, you got to go. And she, I can't, I don't want. What is her response? So let's pick up with this today. We'll start with this meaning of this response, and we'll continue, Mirtz Hashem, to the end of the parak. So the Mefarshim learn as follows. The Mefarshim learn as far as what Esther is saying. What's the significance when she said, everybody knows you can't go in? So there's a difference when you take a risk and you put yourself out in front of the king and you do something that only you and he knows is against the rules, and you do something that everybody knows. It's analogous, you know, you take a couple and they're standing in Kiddush and Shul, and one wants to leave and one doesn't want to leave it, and they have a certain set of rules between them as to when it's okay to say it's on leave or how it's okay to ask, and one of the spouse, you know, violates that rule by asking or something. But what they did, even though you violated my rule, our rule is in our communications, we speak to each other like that, but nobody else standing around knows that anything happened. This is just something that we made up. When it's time to leave, this is how I appreciate you asking me like this, but don't ask me like that. But what happens if you get up there and you start yelling and screaming in front of everybody? So now, everybody knows you just did something that's going to get the other spouse upset. So you put yourself in a totally different position. You put yourself out there and risk something in which this is not a private thing where Ahasuerus can say, okay, this time I'll let it go. Every single person in the entire Medina, 127 provinces, everybody knows you are not allowed to do that. And when you do, it's death. Esther says to Mordechai, this is not a successful plot. You're asking me to do something, you're not setting me up for success. Think of what you're doing, Mordechai, Esther says to Mordechai. You're asking me to do something. Remember what happened to Vashti? What did Vashti do?
She
refused to come. Why was she killed?
She refused.
What's the language the Megillah uses back in the first chapter? Lo al hamelech levado of so Vashti levado. It's not only to the king has Vashti created this inappropriate. The whole, everybody's going to know, all men throughout the whole provinces are going to say, women don't have... this was a public act. She did this to you publicly. This is going to spread. This isn't a private thing that just happened between you and Vashti. But what happens when you violate the king's orders in a way that it's done publicly for everyone to know? She was killed. Says Esther, that's why she's stressing. Everybody, it's not just that I know that I'm not allowed to go in. Mordechai, you're asking me to do something which is putting me at a risk, which I'm not going to survive because of the fact that everybody knows about this. This isn't just a small little thing. It's something that everyone's going to have to deal with that fact. Then she says, but there's one person who's going to be saved. And who's that one person? The person who the king extends his scepter to. So the first one said, you know what Esther is saying to him? He's saying, and I know there's a way out. And you know who's going to be entitled to that way out? Me. He's not going to have me killed. We know, you know, Mordechai, I know, he loves me. And he's going to spare me. And even though I'm doing something public, what's he going to do when I walk in there? He's going to save me. But now, she says to Mordechai, now what position am I in? What position am I in as the queen? I've done something publicly that violates his rule, that everybody know really entitles me to death. But what's the king going to do to me? He's going to spare me, right? Well, what position am I now in to make a plea on behalf of my people? He doesn't even know that I'm Jewish. I'm asking him to retract a statement, which we see later in the Megillah as something which is not simple to do once the letters have been sent out with the king's stamp. I'm asking him to do something small or something large? Something very large. What position are you putting me in? You're putting me in a position where I publicly violate his rules. When he then extends his scepter and says, Esther, I love you, I'll let you live. Am I in a position of power to now ask him for a major favor, or has he just extended himself for me and publicly said, okay, I just gave you a free pass, what's up? You don't want to make a request from that position. So she says to Mordechai, why are you making me do this? Why would you ask me to publicly do something, make him extend the scepter, which is really extending me a free pass of sorts, and then you think I should make this request and spare our people when the second in command sent out the letters with the king's stamp on it already? I'm not in a place to succeed. And further, she says, I haven't been called in 30 days. Without question, it won't be long before I'll be called in. Let me wait. What time of year is it? What time of year is this taking place?
Spring.
It's Pesach time. It's the middle of Nisan. When is the decree? 13th of Adar. Well, we know right now we're in Adar, right? Pesach is next month. So if we're at Pesach time, when is the decree going to be carried out? A full year later. Esther says, Mordechai, what are you asking of me? Everybody knows what I'm doing is risking my life. Let's say the king will extend the scepter to me and he'll let me live. Now I'm in a position of power? Why? Why do this? I haven't been called in 30 days. Wait. Give me a chance. Be patient for a few more days. Without question, he'll call me in, and then I'll have a chance to speak to the king on behalf of the people. That's how the Mefarshim learn Esther's response when she says, everybody in the whole world knows anyone who goes in will be killed, except for the person whose scepter is extended to him. I haven't been called in 30 days. In essence, what she's saying is, let me succeed, Mordechai. Give me a chance to be successful. Don't make me go in like this. Good time. It's a good. Seems like a fairly solid claim on the ground in which she's standing. Okay, let's go on. Yud Beis. So, what's the response to that? Vayagidu leMordechai. They related to Esther. They related Esther's words to Mordechai. Vayagidu leMordechai. Eis divrei Esther. What's the problem with this pasuk?
They instead of he.
Excellent. Who's the they? How's this dialogue taking place until this point so far? Right, Mordechai can't get to the palace. Why can't he get to the palace? He's not dressed appropriately. So Esther sends him clothes. He refuses. He says, fine, I'll send you Hasach. He'll be my go-between. So Hasach goes out. He asks Mordechai what's going on. Mordechai shows him the letter, tells Hasach to tell Esther she's got to go speak to the queen, to Achashverosh. Esther sends back the pasuk we just learned. Go speak to the king. Everybody knows. That's a death sentence. And they related to Mordechai the words of they. Who's they? Who told Mordechai this? So the Gemara is bothered by this question. The Gemara Masechas Megillah noted this. It's one of those things, sometimes I learned, as I was preparing this, I came across that for the first time, and sometimes I've heard the Megillah, read the Megillah, I don't know, probably close to 100 times at this point. Like, that's an interesting question. Who's the they? Who is it? So the Gemara says a couple of options. Some of the Mefarshim learn as follows. And following the path, one of the Mefarshim learns that it's possible that Haman had Hasach killed because of this dialogue that he was having. But we'll leave that aside as for now. Just as far as Pshat, just reading the text of the Megillah, what we have, the Yosef Lekach, the commentary that we've been using, says as follows. Esther was afraid of the way that Mordechai would perceive her hesitancy to go. What did Esther not want Mordechai to think? She didn't want him to think that she was just stepping down from her responsibility. She's the queen. He's saying to her, you got to go, Esther. You're the only one who can do it. You're the only one in a position to save us. Go get it done. So the last thing that she wanted was Mordechai to think that she was basically just saying, I don't want to do it. So she was afraid if she replied directly to Mordechai, that's what he would hear. He would hear basically she's saying, I'm not up for the task. So what she did, he writes, is she told Hasach more as a conversation. Let's talk this over. Let's go over this. I'm not saying this to you to tell Mordechai, but let's just speak this over. Let's see. He wants me to go speak to the king. You know Hasach, what happens if you go speak to the king, right? He's going to want to have me killed. Doesn't sound, maybe he'll allow me to live, but then I'm really not in such a good position of power. Maybe it makes more sense to wait. What do you think? As talking this over. And then she said, it doesn't really make much sense. Go have this be told to Mordechai. Don't tell him directly as if you're my shliach, as if you're my messenger, my agent. Go tell him, I'm not going because. Mordechai's sitting at the gate. Everybody knows that they've been conversing. Speak to the people, start up conversations with the people who are sitting around the gates of the king, around Mordechai. Should Esther go? Shouldn't she go? Doesn't make sense. That it should be the tumult, that everybody's trying to figure out, should we send Esther in or not? And what should come out is that the people speaking will come to the conclusion that she just did of, that doesn't make any sense. She's not going to succeed. She can't. She's going to have to risk her life, and then he's going to save her life, but then he'll be in a position. It's not worth it. Let's wait it out. So that he learned the Vayagidu Lemordechai, it was told, not directly by Hasach himself, but that it became told through the conversations of the inner circle of the Jews who are sitting there in the palace gates. Doesn't make sense. We wish we could have Esther go, but it doesn't make sense to send her in because she's going to risk her life and it's not going to be successful, so let's not do it. But it didn't come directly from Esther out of a fear that Mordechai would misinterpret her not wanting to go as her not wanting to do it, but really all that she's claiming is, Mordechai, I don't think this is a successful plan. So there's a difference when you say no. It's always important when you make a request of somebody and they say no, why are they saying no? Do I say no to you? A person comes and they ask, I make a solicitation. So are you saying no because you don't have the money? Or you don't like the plan that I put to you, what I want to do with the money? Those are very different no's. If I come and I ask you for $10,000 because I have this whole big plan, and you say, no, I'm not going to do it. I really need to know whether or not you're saying, no, I don't have the money for this right now. Don't bother asking again. I don't have it. Beautiful plan. Nice idea. I don't have it. Or am I saying, not for that. I have the money, but I'm not giving it to you for that. So Esther didn't want Mordechai to think that when she was saying no, she was saying, I'm not doing it. I'm not risking my life for this. She's not saying that. She's saying, I'm the queen. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to save the Jewish people. Your plan isn't a good one. Your plan doesn't leave me a chance to succeed because I fear I will use up all my credit by having the king extend himself to save my life publicly in front of everybody who knows that I just risked my life. I don't think I'll succeed. Let me wait until he calls me in, which he'll do anyway. Now, what's the big deal about Esther waiting? There's another underlying current here that she's really very hesitant to go and risk her life for. And that is a halachic issue. Right now, Esther is what we call an ones. She's called being forced against her will in her relationship with the king, with Achashverosh. Generally, a Jewish woman who would have a relationship with a non-Jewish man willingly would become forbidden to her husband. They wouldn't be allowed to remain married anymore. She doesn't have that problem. She's still allowed to remain married to Mordechai because this is not by choice. Chazal say they had gotten married, yeah. The Megillah describes her as an uncle. So, but this is against her will. This isn't willing. She's not interested in this. The king took her. This is what she's got. This is her lot in life. There's an underlying current that says, if I go in there on my own, if I initiate this relationship, there are going to be major halachic ramifications which come from this. Aside from my own spiritual being, I've now violated, I'm now willingly going into a non-Jewish man, I now become forbidden to you. This is a major thing. If I need to do that, that's one thing. But to take a risk like that, with the cost, what we're talking about, the price tag on this is pretty large, it's not worth it. There's no... I don't think I'll succeed by going in to risk what it is that I'm going to risk. So she doesn't want to do it, and she doesn't see the plan for success, the need to do it. So she says, she gets the word back to Mordechai, we're going to wait on this. It's not the right time. Let's come up with something else. Mordechai receives the word. Vayagidu leMordechai, they tell Mordechai what's going on, and he responds back to Esther. Puzzle Gid Gimel 13. Vayomer Mordechai lo shivel Esther, al tedami v'nafshech lihimaleit beis hamelach mikol hayehudim. Do not imagine that you will be able to escape in the king's palace any more than the rest of the Jews. Al tedami v'nafshech. Don't think you're going to be safe there. Rashi writes. You don't have Rashi in front of you. Rashi says al tachshavi savur lihimaleit b'yoyim ha'hariga b'beis hamelach. Don't think when the 13th of Adar rolls around that you'll be safe and protected in the palace of the king. That you don't want to endanger yourself now by going there without permission. Don't think you're going to be any safer later by staying in the palace. What's Mordechai saying to her? You're not going to be safe in the palace of the king. You're not going to be saved anyway. So Mordechai responds as follows. You think, Esther, that it's not worth the risk. You think that the plan is not so great and it's not worth the risk. Let me tell you something. So the Vilna Gaon says as follows. He brings in a halachic concept from the Gemara in Shabbos. Fascinating question the Gemara asks in the Sefer Shabbos. When are the prohibition to take a break? Put a pause on the Megillah story for a second. We'll learn a little bit about a fascinating question in Hilchos Shabbos. A person is not allowed to bake on Shabbos. Cooking on Shabbos is one of the principal prohibitions. What's the penalty for cooking on Shabbos?
Stoning,
correct. It's a death. It's one of the primary malachas of Shabbos, one of the principal acts that it cannot be done. A person is not allowed to cook. There's a halacha that if there's a piece of bread, dough, baking in an oven, the types of ovens that they had in the times of the sages were those, I forgot what they're called. Tanur in Hebrew.
Stone
thing where they would plaster the dough. They still have them in Israel today. The Arabs use them, some of the Jews use them. Where you plaster the dough up against the wall of the oven and it bakes. There was a rabbinic prohibition from removing the dough from an oven wall on Shabbos. One of the many rabbinic prohibitions that they made, there's a dispute amongst the commentators exactly why that prohibition is there, but there's a rabbinic prohibition from removing dough that's placed on the wall of an oven on Shabbos. Irrelevant to us now why that is, let's just assume that that's what it is. What about the following scenario? If I put a raw piece of dough in the oven on Shabbos, put it in, and I take it out, have I done anything wrong? Take it out within a minute.
Yes.
What have I done wrong?
Remove the dough.
Okay, let's put it on, not on the walls, I put it on a fancy pan where I don't have to deal with that issue. I just put the dough in and took it out before, without actually plastering up against the wall in a different way. Have I done anything as far as cooking goes?
No. The oven wasn't on.
When the oven's on and hot, I put it in, but I take it out before it has a chance to cook. Did I do anything wrong?
Well, your intent was wrong, wasn't it?
Yes, but did I do anything wrong?
Not going to be cooked, so it's not cooked.
I haven't violated anything. I didn't cook. In order to violate the prohibition of Shabbos, I need to bake bread. And I didn't do it. I put it in, and I took it out quickly enough that it didn't bake. Now, obviously, rabbinically, they forbade that, and it's not a good idea to get into. You're playing with fire, very literally. But technically speaking, I haven't violated Shabbos, because to violate Shabbos, you need to cook, not just put something in an oven. It takes time to cook. How much time does it take to cook a loaf of bread? Let's assume 20 minutes. Till it cooks to a certain point where it's now defined as cooked bread, I haven't done anything wrong. So the Gemara asks the following question. What do you do if one person, we'll call him Reuven, takes his dough and plasters it up against the wall of an oven and walks away. Walks away from it. It's going to get cooked in about 20 minutes. What's going to happen 20 minutes from now? He's going to be liable to the death penalty. He just cooked on Shabbos. I walk by, and I see the dough there, still raw, up against the wall of the oven. And I say, oy vey, Reuven, he's in big trouble if 20 minutes go by, and he doesn't get that dough out of there, because that dough is going to cook, and he put it there, and he's liable to the death penalty. So I want to save my friend Reuven. So what do I want to do? Take it off. What problem do I have if I take it off? I have a rabbinic prohibition of removing dough from the sides of the wall. So the Gemara asks, am I allowed to violate a rabbinic injunction, which is relatively minor, in order to save my friend from violating a biblical prohibition of cooking on Shabbos? What do you say about that?
Well, it sounds logical that you could do that, but that doesn't mean it's right.
Right? So that's the question. Am I allowed to put myself in danger, so to speak? Am I allowed to violate a rabbinic prohibition, do something which I'm not allowed to do, no benefit to me whatsoever? The only benefit is there's another Jew who will be saved.
Thank you.
So, the Gemara says... Not like you. The Gemara says you're not allowed to do that.
No?
Correct. The Gemara says, Ein omrim chet b'shvil sheyizke chaveracha. You are not allowed to violate something in order that somebody else should benefit. If for you, all you get out of it is a chet. Now you yourself, if you placed the dough there and then decided, I don't want to do this, are you allowed to violate a rabbinic prohibition to save yourself from a biblical prohibition? Different question entirely. But here, where you are violating a rabbinic law to save somebody else from a biblical law, the Gemara says no, and there's a tremendous amount of literature, exactly the parameters, what are the scenarios, when yes, when no, but the basic rule is, the principle is, you can't sin to save someone else from what they've done.
You what you could...
That's their life.
Break
to save someone's life, yeah. Yes. When they did something to violate Shabbos, you're not saving their life. In other words, that's not considered, you're not saving their life. But that's not saving, in other words, if they're drowning in the water, then yes, you violate whatever you need to violate, biblical, rabbinic, to save their life. When they have decided that they don't believe in God or they don't believe in the system and want to do something, you can't sin to save them from that.
Was it an accident?
Yeah. Then there's distinctions. Did the person do it on purpose, by accident? There's lots of work. The principle is you can't sin to save somebody else. And then this could be a whole other discussion exactly the parameters, but that's not for now. Says the Vilna Gaon, Mordechai responds to Esther as follows. Esther, you think you're safe right now? You think you're okay. You think you're protected. Nobody knows that you're Jewish. You'll be spared. And therefore, what I'm asking you to do is put yourself out to save the Jewish people. And you're viewing it as, I don't know that this is a good plan for me to risk doing. I'm not allowed to do this. I'm not allowed to put myself out, violate my own safety, risk my own halacha. I'm not allowed to do this halachically either, because my willing participation in this marriage will be but until now it's been against my will. Now it's going to be my own initiation. I'm not allowed to do this halachically. I'm not allowed to risk my life. I'm doing all these things and there's no benefit to me. Maybe I'm not allowed to do this, Mordechai. Mordechai says, Esther, is that what you're thinking? When you say to me that this isn't a good plan and you don't think that it's a good idea, you think that you're going to be safe and therefore, because in your mind it didn't weigh out to be such a good plan, therefore it's better to be safe because what the option? You got it wrong. Al tadam even hashef, do not think for a moment that you are going to be spared while sitting in the palace of the king come Adar next year. Because you also will not be any better off in the palace of the king than you will be with us. Farshim explained various reasons why either word would get out that she would be Jewish, or that whatever would happen to save the Jews, she would get caught up in anyway. Let's continue. Actually, let's read it inside. Pasuk Yudal. Ki im acharesh tacharishi bo'ez hazos. Because if you will be silent during this time, right now, revach v'hatzalah ya'amod la'yehudim mimakom acher. The beautiful phrase, classic phrase, the banner of the Jewish people throughout the centuries. Right now, you're the person in charge. You're the person who's got the ability to save the Jewish people. But you know what? If you don't do it, don't think that the survival of the Jewish people is contingent upon you. It's not contingent upon an individual. And if you back down, revach v'hatzalah ya'amod la'yehudim mimakom. We'll have another place. Salvation of the Jewish people will come from somewhere else. V'atu beis avich tovedid, and you and your father's home will all be lost. Umi yadeyoim la'eis kazos yigat la'malchus. Now that last phrase we'll leave untranslated because there's a couple different ways to translate it. Let's just do it with the first half for now. Says Mordechai, you're not any safer than anybody else. And if you remain silent right now, you'll be lost. Your father's home will be lost. And we'll be saved from somewhere else. You know, they say always, you know, the Jewish people, the survival of the Jewish people is guaranteed. We as a Jewish people will be guaranteed, there's no question about it, we have been promised for thousands of years, we've made it for thousands of years against all odds, we'll survive. Whether or not you as an individual will be part of the Jewish people who survive, that's up to you. So I don't need you, and you don't need me for the survival of the Jewish people. Whether or not we as individuals want to be part of the Jewish people, that's our choice. We could join in or we could jump off. But that the Jewish people will survive without us, it will happen anyway. Says Mordechai, we'll be saved with or without you, Esther. Right now, you're the person who has the ability to do it. You want in? You got to take it. You got to be in. He quotes the pasuk of Vilna Gaon. The pasuk in Mishlei says, "Gan nisrape b'malachto." Somebody who weakens his hand in his activity, achu l'ba'al mashches. He's actually a brother. He's a relative of the destroyer himself. Vilna Gaon is someone who weakens his hand in his activity. He has an ability to save and doesn't. It's as if you destroyed yourself. Even though you didn't do the actual destruction, but if you had the ability to save and didn't, as on the Gaon learns, Yesh biyodo lahatzil ve'enu matzil, someone who has in his hand the ability to spare, to save, to create some ability to take someone else out of danger and doesn't, it's not enough that he lost his reward that he could have gotten for having been able to save, but it's as if you yourself destroyed. But I didn't do the destruction. I just sat by. If you were standing by the edge of the river and had ability to save somebody and didn't, so you are viewed in heaven as if you pushed the person in. You push it. I didn't push him in. But you were standing there. You had an ability to save them. And you stood by and watched. In heaven, we view you as a murderer. Because you had an ability to save and didn't. And there's no excuse of, but I didn't do it. I'm not going to put the person in that position. So of course, and if you wouldn't have had an ability to save the person, if the currents were such that you couldn't have, it would have been too great a risk, then 100%, you're not responsible. But you had a chance. You had an ability to save somebody. You had an ability to give somebody the resources that they needed to survive, and you didn't. We view you as if you put them in the place that brought about their demise. Achu l'ba'al mashas. You're considered a relative of the destroyer himself. You're viewed in that way. Says Mordechai to Esther, you have an ability to save. You have an ability to go in. You have an ability to do something. And you're going to claim it's not worth the risk. I can't risk myself. I can't put my halachic status on the line. I don't think I'll be successful. You have a chance. I'm telling you, you need to do it. And you need to go. And you need to do it. And if you don't, you will be lost, your family will be lost in this world and the next world because you'll be considered as if the destruction of the Jewish people rested on your head. And without you, we'll be fine. We'll find somewhere else. God has many agents at His ability, at His disposal. He'll find a way to save us. Right now, it's on your head. What about her claim that it didn't make sense? Why should I risk my life and then need a favor from the king to extend his scepter? Why don't I just wait till I get in and I'll have his attention instead of having to do this? What about her claim? It sounds like a logical claim. That's why I'm in a very bad position if I already needed a favor from the king to save me. So that Yosef Lekach says a beautiful idea. Something yet we live in our lives so frequently. It's such a powerful thought. He says, how do you feel about somebody who makes a request of you, but they make a request of you like, while they're talking about something else. Like, he came to visit for something else, or you went to them to borrow them. Like, while you're, oh, by the way, while I'm here, you know, can I ask you for this, that, or the other? Because I don't really think you need it. You need it or really mean it if when you asked me, it just sort of came tagged along with something else. Like, you happen to have been here, oh, while I'm here, let me ask you for this, that, or the other. That almost never works. If you make a major request, can you imagine making a solicitation for somebody for a significant amount of money? Sure, Rabbi Feldman and I wanted to make a $5,000 solicitation for Jacob's Angels for somebody. And we happened to be at his house for Kiddush for they had a child. We're at their house for Kiddush, and we said, you know, while we're here, we'd like to solicit you for five... Are you kidding me? While you're here, like, you happen to have been in my house because I made a Kiddush, and now you think is the right time? How seriously do you take that request? When do you take the request seriously? When you call up and you say, I need to see you. I really don't have time. I need to speak with you. This is very important. It's really hard for me to make an appointment. Tell me, when can you see me? Oh, this is serious. You're willing to do that when I tell you that I don't have time, and you say, I need to speak with you. It's really hard this week. It must happen this week. When can I see you? Oh. Then I'm ready to hear you. Because when I make that time, and you come in, and you make your pitch, I know that this is serious. And I know that you, who are making that solicitation, are willing to risk everything that you have for it. You're willing to put yourself out there, knowing that you're risking my saying to you, I told you I don't have time. And you said, this is too important. I don't care. I must see you. When you make a solicitation like that, you're much more successful at being able to get what you need because the person of whom you're soliciting knows you're serious about it. Mordechai says to Esther, I hear what you're saying. You're right. You're right. On a certain level, you're saying, why should I risk doing a public act that everybody knows is forbidden, everybody knows carries a death sentence, and then I need to ask a favor of the king that he should extend his scepter to me to say I love you? I'm in a horrible position now, Esther said. Now is when I should ask to save my people? He just put himself out for me publicly. Now is not the time. Mordechai says, no, just the opposite. Now is the time. You go into that king and you say, I need to speak to you. And you risk your life. And when he extends that scepter and you say, I know that you love me, I need to talk to you. And we need to talk now. You know when this is going to happen, Achashverosh? 12 months from now. This is not going to happen for another year. I'm not waiting. Now. He's going to say, Esther, you did this, you risked your life, you put yourself out, you know that I could have had you killed easily. I even have a history of having my wives killed for things like this. For something which is going to happen a year from now? You couldn't wait until I called you in? He says, no. It's too important. And when it's important, that's how you let the person know that it's important to you. How do you let them know? You make a pitch. You make an appointment, and you say, I have to see you, and we're going to speak now. This needs to be done. My people, their history, their future rest now on this happening. I don't care that it's going to happen a year from now. I don't care that you haven't called me. I don't even care that it would have likely been that you would call me within a day or so from now. I'm going to do it now and like this. And Mordechai says, and you're not going to be any safer if you don't do it. You think it's a risk that's not worth taking? You're going to be just as susceptible to it, you and your father's house. Now, as you would be a year from now, you're included with the rest of us. A Jew is a Jew is a Jew, and you're included in this. And therefore, this is what you need to do. And then he concludes, Umi yodeya im la'eith kazos higa'at l'malchu. So the way that Art Scroll translates it as, and who knows whether it was just for such a time as this that you attained the royal position. I think this is the way that most of us would generally translate it. He's saying to her, this is what it's all about. This classic phrase, which so many times Jews throughout our history, in our own personal lives, in our long and storied history, have felt, I've been put in this position now for this. This is why I am here. This is why I have these resources. This is why I'm in this city. This is why I'm in this place. Who knows? Umi yodeh, like this is the battle cry. Im la'eis kazos higat l'malchus. It's almost a Jewish guilty conscience. I know that I often have. I'm sure many of you have experienced. The last thing that I want is at the end of 120 years, you get up to Shemayim, and they say, Don't you know? The whole story, the whole game was so that you would be there now with those resources to help X, Y, and Z. And you blew it. Like, that's the biggest fear. That's like the Jewish religious guilty conscience of whenever someone comes and asks you for whatever it is, if you have the ability to do it, it's, how do I know? Like, umi yodeim le'eis kazos, yigat l'malchus. Maybe Esther says to her, you know why you're queen? This. You know how long she's been queen for? A couple years already. For this moment, she says now. A prophet can say that, right? When a prophet says to you, this is why all of this has taken place. It's for this moment. Well, when a prophet says it, alright. We don't have that. We just always have this fear of, maybe this is the reason why this, maybe this is the reason why that. But there's a concept that's out there of umi yodea. Who knows? Maybe it was for this moment that you were put in the place that you were in. Now, most of the Mefarshim actually do not read the phrase like this. It's as a beautiful phrase as it is when it's translated like that. Umi odeim la'eis kazos higat l'malchus. Who knows if it was not for this very time that you were put in this place. Rashi, the Vilna Gaon, they all don't learn that way. Rashi learns as follows. Umi odeya im yachpots becha melech l'shona haba shuhu zman ho hariga. He learns La'ez Kazos means at this time next year. Not who knows if for this very moment you received the kingdom. Who knows if La'ez Kazos, if at this time he ga'at l'malchus, you will still be the queen. You're saying, I shouldn't go in now, because later he'll call me. I'll be in a position a year from now. Like, we have a whole year, Mordechai, chill out. So who says you're still going to be queen a year from now? You know that? Now you're queen. Now is when you need to do it. Who knows if you'll still be in a position? It's a similar idea, but it's very different. The first idea is translated as, like, who knows if everything that you have isn't for this very moment? This is why you're here. This is a little different. It's a nuance. It's, now you're in that place. Who knows that you'll have this position later? Who knows that you'll have the resources? Who knows that you'll have the time? Who knows that you'll have the strength? Who knows that you'll be living here later? Later I'll do it. Later I'll do it. Who knows? Says Mordechai. Now you're the queen. Don't say we have a year, next Adar I'll deal with it. Who knows that you'll still be queen at that time, that the king will still desire you. Because after all, we are only in Nisan. And this is taking place a whole year from now. Who knows what the future will bring. So Mordechai makes this impassioned plea to Esther, understanding from her that all that she wanted to do is she was saying it wasn't going to be a successful plan, I need to wait. And he says the opposite, you need to do it now. Now is the time to make the statement that says, this is important. I have to do it now. Who knows if you'll be in a place, in a position to do this in the future. There's no guarantee that you'll be able to do that at all. Therefore, you need to do it now. This is the reason why you're the queen. And if you don't do it, salvation will come from elsewhere. But right now, you're the person who has the ability to do it. Not doing it, he says, is tantamount to actively killing the Jewish people. Someone who has the ability to save and doesn't do it is viewed in heaven as if they themselves have been the cause of it. Esther responds, Vatoimer Esther lo hashiv el Mordechai in Pasuk Tezvav Lech. You know, the way the trump, it's just like, it goes, it's just like this, you lead up to gather all of the Jewish people. What's this the takeoff of this phrase, this beautiful phrase, Kenosis Kol HaYehudim, gather the Jewish people? What was Haman's claim against the Jews when he first comes to Mordechai, to Achashverosh in the second chapter? What does he say at the beginning of the third pet chapter? Correct. Pasuk 8, verse 8 in the third chapter. Vayomer Haman HaMelech Achashverosh, Haman says to the king Achashverosh, Yeshno Am Echad, there is a certain people, Mefuzar U'Mefurad Bein Ha'anim. They are scattered and dispersed amongst all the peoples, not just physically. We are scattered and dispersed. We're not unified. We're not together. We're all over doing our own thing. That's what allows for such a destruction to come. And what does Esther say? Gather all the Jewish people. Knoisus kol ha'yehudim. When she says it's time to get a move on, it's time to change the tide, to turn the tide. First thing that she says is go gather the Jewish people. Knoisus kol ha'yehudim. Gather all the people together. people that are gathered in Shushan, it would have been impossible to gather the Jews from everywhere, so she focuses on the city that she is in, the capital city of Shushan. V'tzumu alai, fast for me, al tochu v'al tishtu, shloshes yamim la'al v'yom, 3 days, gaman even arasayat sumkena, I and my maidservants will do as well, uvechein, and then with this, avo el ha-melech asher lo chados, I will go to the king against the rule, so to speak, even though it is unlawful, the Asher Ovadati Ovadati. And if I perish, I perish. Why does she need the fasting? Why does she suggest fasting? Why did this whole calamity befall the Jewish people? What did the sages say? They went to the banquet, the feast of Achashverosh, years before, almost 10 years before, they went to the feast of Achashverosh, which Mordechai had told them not to do. If you remember last week when we learned that this chapter, the fourth chapter, began with the phrase "Mordechai yada es kol asher na'asa." Mordechai knew all that had taken place. And we asked last week, what do you mean he knew? Everybody knew. Why Mordechai? The letters went out. All the Jews were in mourning. So Rashi says Mordechai knew. He knew why this was happening. What did Rashi say? He knew that they had gone to the feast of Achashverosh years before when he told them, don't go, it's not for you. And they went. This is why it's taking place. So what does Esther say? Well, before we remedy this situation, you enjoyed the feast of Achashverosh. Well, for 3 days we're going to go without food. Al tzichlu v'al tishtu. No eating, no drinking for 3 days. I am going to go in. Uvechein avo l'melech asher lo kadosh. I will go to the king, although it is not lawful. What do you mean it is not lawful? So Rashi says, well, the simple meaning is it's unlawful because...
make it true.
Right, that's what she said. Everybody knows the rules. You go into the king's chamber without being given permission, you're liable to the death penalty. He's going to kill you. Sages say, Rashi quotes, Asher lo kadosh, it's also unlawful as far as halacha goes. Because this is going to be her first time in which she's initiating the relationship. Until now, it's always been in the level where she's being forced. She's living with Achashverosh, but it wasn't her choice. It's not up to her. But now she says, if I go in, I'm going to go in. V'chasher ovadati, ovadati. And just like I'm now beginning the process, if I perish, I'm going to perish. Rashi says also, and on a halachic level as well, just like as I go in now, I'm going to be forever lost to you. Because whatever will happen at this point, if he's interested in any type of a relationship, and I've initiated it, so then we're finished. I will be asura to you. I will be forbidden to you forever, she says to Mordechai. And the chapter concludes, Vayavur Mordechai Vayaas Kechol Asher Tzivso Alov Esther. And Mordechai then left. Now Vayavur, which Archibald translates as left, really means he like passed over something. He was over. Vayavur Mordechai, and he did all that Esther had commanded him. And the Mepharshim have two different approaches. So what do you mean he left? He passed. What did he? What's the Megillah telling us that Vayavur Mordechai? So as far as Pshat goes, the simpler meaning. Vayavur Mordechai means he went out amongst all the people. The Torah uses that language. Vayavru Yehoshua b'soicha machana. He went out amongst all the people, and this was the beginning of the process of gathering them up. Somebody needs to go and unify the people, to gather them all together. So Mordechai went out, and he gathered them up. Rashi quotes, Vayavur Mordechai from the Lashon of an Avera. The Hebrew word for sin is an Avera. Vayavur Mordechai. Mordechai, so to speak, sinned. He violated. What did Mordechai violate? So Vayavur Mordechai, Rashi says, Vayavur Mordechai al das. He violated the principle of halacha, lehisanos beyonta rishon shel Pesach, to fast on the first night of Pesach. Because Esther was sitting, this conversation took place, Chazal tell us, on the 14th, fasted for 3 days on Erev Pesach, on the first night of Pesach, and on the second day of Pesach, which would be the second day of Yontif outside of Eretz Yisrael, they fasted. You know, a lot of fasts on Yontif. You have a mitzvah to eat matzah, mitzvah for maror, mitzvah to have a suud at Yontif, it's time for the meals. And Vayavur Mordechai was over, he violated the law of the Torah, the halacha, ka'asher tzivso alav Esther. Esther said, this is what's going on, you've implored me and said, we can't wait till after Pesach. Like, it's Yontif, let's wait till after Yontif we'll go in to see the king. We have a whole year anyway, Mordechai, let's wait. Well, Mordechai got the message across loud and clear, we're not waiting for anything. You got to go into the king, and the feast that you're going to have, that'll be your Pesach Seder. You'll go in and have a party with Achashverosh, but we're fasting until that point. No wine, no four cups, no matzah, no maror, no suda that year. everybody was fasting amongst the entire Jewish people. Trivia question, which year did the Jewish people not observe the Pesach Seder was during the years in Shushan? Everything that Esther had commanded and Mordechai did, including having to be over on the Torah, including violating the principles of the Torah, because she had said to fast, and that's what they were going to do, despite the fact that it was Pesach. That concludes the fourth parak, this beautiful parak, the discussion between Esther and Mordechai about the decision to go into to speak to Achashverosh. All right, comments, questions?
Rabbi.
Yeah.
The Jews were dispersed at that time. Jews were dispersed over a whole continent. And so this wasn't the existence of the Jewish people as a whole was not really threatened by Haman. Is that correct or not?
It's unclear. It's a good question. The majority of the Jews following the... If you remember what... So 70 years before, all of the Jews were living in Eretz Yisrael. Beis HaMikdash stood... They were exiled by Nebuchadnezzar, and the overwhelming majority went to this area of Babel, to this area of Persia. This is where the overwhelming majority, whether or not all, you know, Jews have always been a migrating people. This was our first exile, so I don't know if we already had that gene pool deeply established where they've just continued migrating out. Maybe they did. It's likely that some did. But you would have, had Haman been successful, you would have had a, you know, 90-95%. You know, ratio that the Jews were living. So they're only 70 years since the exile. So it's less than that even. So it's not not a long time. So, but that was definitely where the majority was.
So two things. I'm noticing that I never learned this about the fasting on Pesach, and I'm wondering, I learned that when Mashiach comes, the Chagim that we're going to still have is Purim and maybe Hanukkah or something else, but not Pesach. Because it's going to be so much greater, the time of Mashiach. So I heard that they'll be canceled. I'm wondering if that's where it comes from, being canceled, because he canceled out Pesach.
No, that wouldn't be right. That's a point that I'm not well versed in. I know that I think the Rambam says that there's discussion as to what's going to happen when Mashiach comes. I don't know.
And the second question I wanted to ask. So we learned that we can't save a Jew who is cooking intentionally on Shabbos or baking on Shabbos. You know, we're not allowed to do that to violate Shabbos to save him. So in this case, he seemed to tell her to violate their ketubah, I guess by telling her to go in willingly to Achashverosh. So it seems almost like he crossed over. Like I'm trying to figure out how
he was saying, you're going to be killed also.
Yeah,
you're not an outside observer watching someone else do something.
Spiritually.
Yeah, you're also going to be gone.
Two ways. Like really, it's a heavy, heavy thing to tell her to do. Especially if it's his wife. You know?
And is that, you know, the history of the Jewish people, the future of the Jewish people rests on her shoulders at that time, so that's what you do. There's no Torah if there are no Jews. That's what they're only going to say something like that. So like, that's what, yeah, sorry.
I think it's interesting that in that conversation it starts out like Mordechai is like telling her what to do. He's in charge, so to speak, and she's just this beautiful girl in the palace. But at the end, it says he did exactly as she commanded him.
Right, no, it's switched, 100%.
To the position of being the queen.
Once he convinced her that her arguments were maybe valid, but faulty at this time, that she needed to go, you're 100%. It's a great comment that she took control and said, I'm the queen, and this is what we're going to do. You get everybody to go fast. You violate Pesach. You don't eat matzah and maror in the four cups. And this is what we're going to eat. And he went 100%. 100%. All right. So Freilich and Purim, everybody. Enjoy. And we'll next Tuesday, of course, is Purim. So we will not meet. And we'll meet the Tuesday after that.